Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
You listen to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests on today's show, joined by Andres Gallardo and Nathan Thomas. We've been speaking about all things Catalonia, but we'll look away from there. I think we'll move on in the second hour. I'm going to be looking, hopefully, at the Harvey Weinstein case as well, but we thought we'd kick off with the latest, the ongoing saga of Brexit. Already this morning, we had some press releases coming out, some joint statements about the talks for Brexit need to speed up. Theresa May and Jean-Claude Juncker have said that they need to accelerate their Brexit negotiations, but there was no sign of a breakthrough after their working dinner. But a nice, rather nice picture of them both having a bit of a hug. Nathan, I just, you know, where do we are still here. We still seem to be getting no closer to making that breakthrough.
And we don't seem to know much more than we did before, but they're claiming a victory. Everybody's claiming a victory because we're going to talk faster, I guess. But the question is, what are they going to say, which is any different or any get you any further than what they're saying now? And I don't know what that answer is. It just keeps on going and nothing happens.
What they said was that the Prime Minister and the President of the European Commission reviewed the progress made in the Article 50 negotiations and so far and agreed that these efforts should accelerate over the months to come. The working dinner took place in a constructive and friendly atmosphere, so at least they weren't throwing things at each other.
There was no food fight, which is good, but it is still a matter of they still haven't gotten past, according to the EU, the three basic starting issues that they started with how many months ago now, which is the border with Ireland, the financial payment, and the situation of EU expats in the UK and UK expats in the EU, or migrants, if you prefer. And those haven't been settled. The EU says it's not going to discuss other things until those things are settled. And nobody seems to have said that we are much closer. They keep saying we're closer, we're closer, we're closer. But nobody has released any details of what any of those agreements will be. And I don't know if they will. It'll be interesting to see if at some point both the UK negotiators and the EU negotiators say, okay, we've settled the Irish border question, or we've settled the question on the rights of citizens, but we can't really tell you what they are because it all could change later. I don't know whether this is going to dribble out as this is settled and here are the details, because of course, as soon as any details come out, somebody is going to object to them because they're not the details that they're going to want, and then you're going to go back and get into this whole circular thing again where, no, we won't have that, we can't stand that, and you're not making any progress. One of the best things in the negotiators' minds, I'm sure, is let us negotiate the whole thing, and when we're finished and we've all dotted our I's and crossed our T's on the papers, then we give you the whole thing and fight about it then. But at this point, I haven't heard any details at all of anything that has been settled, but maybe we aren't supposed to know.
I mean, you can say we won't need to accelerate the pace of change, but I mean, if you accelerate, if they get a little closer, will that be seen as a victory?
Who knows what getting a little closer means, unless, you know, they'll tell us. And what we've been hearing is one size, the UK says we're making progress, the EU says no, we're not, but we don't know whether, you know, what either of those statements mean, but it keeps it going.
I mean, yes, Andrea's coming.
Yeah, the bottom line here is this is the whole thing is a mess. And it is a mess because there was no plan. The EU was surprised at the outcome of the vote, so they hadn't prepared for it. And the government didn't have a plan to take to take it forward. Now, they are improvising. And when you improvise, you find yourself in the situation that they're in. They don't actually know what they want. My prediction, and I haven't got a crystal ball, is that, and I said that months ago, Brexit will never happen. Never happen the way that you think is going to happen, or the British voters thought it would happen.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Giles. It's Dave. I'm just laughing here, basically, because Theresa May is saying she wants things speeded up. Wasn't it her that called a worthless election in the middle of the two-year Article 50 period, thereby wasting 2 months of valuable negotiating time because the UK government was suspended during that time and there was no one actually to talk to? And now she's turning around saying things need to be speeded up. Just made me laugh, that's all. I could go on for about an hour, but there you go. Anyway, thanks. I'm really enjoying this morning show. It's great. Thank you.
That's good to hear. The BBC correspondent has said that Kevin Connolly says that the joint statement released after dinner was a masterpiece of uncommunicative communication. It said... avoided a repeat of the fallout from the last bilateral dinner in Downing Street in April, when the EU side was reported to have described the British as delusional and even disparaged the food.
Well, the problem is, I think, everybody expects to know everything the moment it happens. And technologically, we can do that. I mean, you see the talks live or the statements live and coming out and hugging, and then the media goes after the principals and say, what did you talk about? And they have to, they're not, it's very difficult to just stand there and say absolutely nothing. So they figure they have to say something. So what you end up with is this constant back and forth between the media asking what's going on and the principals from either side not really having anything they are willing to say, so they just babble a lot to satisfy the demands for answers, but the answers aren't what anybody wants.
Look, here you've got... This is such a complex negotiation that the public don't realise how complex this is. They think it's about a few immigrants here, people who live in Europe, people who live in the UK, some bill that you have to pay, and that's it. It's more complex than that. You've got fisheries, you've got the Airbus, you've got banking systems, you've got the city in London, you've got... all of these things are so, so complex that to make progress is going to be very, very difficult. And some of the things will never be achieved. So that's why my argument is that it will never happen the way the voters voted for.
Well, the one thing that has kind of raised its head more this past week than it has in the past is this idea of no deal, where the UK just says, that's it, we're gone, and we are an independent nation, and we can function that way. And I don't think there's any question about that. And just, no, we're not paying anything, we're not doing anything, and make their own decisions about what they're going to do about borders and so on. And I mean, this is... like I say, they're talking about it more and more, whether it is indeed a government plan to actually do that, or whether it is just trying to scare the other side into, well, we better do something, or they're just going to walk away and that would be bad for everybody, which I think most people agree it probably would.
I mean, there's a survey come out this week by the Resolution Foundation at Sussex University, calculating that the average household would pay an extra £260 a year for imported goods. From 3 million households, those who consume the most imported good, that figure would nearly double to 500 a year. The report said that without a Brexit deal, European goods would incur the same tariffs of those imposed on other World Trade Organization countries, including levies on dairy products by 45% and meat products by 37%, but a government spokesman said that ministers were optimistic about achieving an agreement with the EU that would allow for frictionless trade in goods and services. So the no Brexit deal would hike up prices for and hit British people in their pockets.
And it would hit Europeans in their pockets too for some things, and you would either pay the additional price, which we do all the time. Prices of gasoline goes up. Do people stop driving their car for any reason? It has nothing to do with Brexit, but gasoline prices, you know, if they go down a couple of pennies, you run off and fill the tank. But if they go up, you're still going to buy it. if the price of meat goes up, you're still going to buy it. You may not buy as much, but life will go on one way or another. But what we are in now is this holding pattern that nobody knows what's going to happen or when. And I think it may be long after March of 2019 before much of this is settled.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, John from Los Belitos again. Just to say, Giles, on your comment, that was a comment basically on the tariffs that are imposed by the EU on non-member nations. And that if you have a free trade agreement with the rest of the world, there's no difference. You may pay no tariffs on import of beef and goods and whatever the case may be. It's going to hit Europe hard. I was reading an article today. It's going to hit Europe hard, the same as going to hit the UK temporarily hard. But I'd like to pose a question to you there. How the hell do you think the panel feel that how can the rest of the world possibly survive with not having a free trade agreement with Europe? And that's 80%. So how the hell does the rest, 80% of the rest of the world survive without a free trade agreement with Europe? As I said before, we've lived off the teat for so long, but terrified of getting off it. And as I said, I don't particularly care whether we get in or we get out, but we also forget there's a huge amount of investment by the EU corporations into the UK direct, colossal. And that's going to hit them very, very hard too, because any poisoning of relations between the EU and the UK is going to poison all those European corporations. And we haven't heard too much from them yet because everything hasn't been brought down to a situation where we walk. If we walk, then you're going to have the corporations and the business and the people who work in them complaining to their leaders. We still seem to have this problem with Barnier and Juncker. And when it comes down to it, they are going to be peripheral. It's going to come down between sovereign governments. And the way things are happening in Europe at the moment, it's very, very dangerous. You've got the far right springing up. And as I said before, the Czech elections, which looked like going to the right again, is all driving nails into Europe. And if we do have a downturn, and I think we've just broken the record of over 10 years now of a bull market, if we do have a downturn in the financial markets, who's going to bail out the Mediterranean? And I think that's going to be the catalyst for the breakup, apart from all this political stuff that's going on, which is really quite horrific with the far right and the far left. Everything's polarized now. To me, it's very, very dangerous times.
Very dangerous.
Pessimist.
Very dangerous times. Thanks for that call in there, John. Yes, the rise of the far right as well. We've seen with the elections recently in Austria and the Czech Republic as well. Something else for the EU to be concerned about. Andreas, you want to come on a point on that one?
Yes, this is resembling more and more the 1930s, extreme sort of political groups appear from nowhere, and they become very, very popular. And we know how all that ended up. So yes, there are dangerous times. I agree with the caller on that. This has all been triggered by the deepest recession that we've had not that long ago. In Spain, we've seen the rise of Podemos, which is a product of that crisis. The Brexit is the same thing. Going back to Brexit. As I said, to make progress on those negotiations, nobody to speak because I'm not in the middle of them, but I just can't see how they're going to make a positive progress that the outcome will be beneficial for either the UK or the European Union. I think both sides are going to be losers on this. But nobody said during the campaign of Brexit, because I guess nobody knew.
Well, I think John made one interesting point, which has been made before, but the idea that the UK seems to have this idea in the whole thing that they are the only ones who are, if they leave the EU, they're the only ones dealing in that situation, and they don't seem to accept the fact that most of the rest of the world, as John said, does not have a free trade agreement with the EU, and everybody functions quite well. The UK seems to have this feeling that they have to get something that no one else has, And it's getting more and more complicated and more difficult to get that. But they will, when they get out of the EU, actually become part of another group, which is a very large group, larger than the EU. And these are the countries that are not part of the EU. And they will learn to deal with the EU the same way everybody else has.
And we have a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRV. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Sharon Ali Khansi. Hi. I'd just to say that, Nathan is absolutely right. I love his balance, his sense of balance. It's nice to have somebody neutral. That said, I've been listening very carefully over the last few months to the extreme right parties that have been taking part in the European elections. We've had Holland, Austria, France, and all those people that we've heard. Not one of them has said that they want the European Union to disintegrate. Marine Le Pen said she didn't want more Europe, but she did not say that she wanted the European Union to disintegrate. There's so much of a strong will within the European Union to keep it going and to improve it that I don't think the Southern Med countries would suffer any more than... Yes, they suffered. Of course they suffered. But so did the UK. I mean, look at... And when we talk about corruption, City of London, I mean, come on. Who caused this mess? Wall Street, City of London, you can't get away from that. So I don't think the European Union will crumble because of the increase in the far right. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Thanks for the call in there, Sharon. 952-78-4000, the phone number. studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. Andres.
The European Union has become suddenly this horrible thing that everyone wants to destroy. Look, if we look at history in Europe, since the European Union, first the economic common market and then the European Union, we've seen the longest period of peace and prosperity that Europe has ever seen. We've never been so peaceful in Europe for so long. You have to give credit to the fact that we are in the European Union for this reason. I don't see why... Yes, it can be improved, but it's a pretty good thing that we can take advantage of. In terms of the trading, yes, you can become part of a different bloc, but naturally and geographically, you tend to trade with your neighbours. Just continue that trading partnership with the European Union. It's going to be very important for the UK when Brexit happens, if he ever happens.
Of course it's very important. There's no question about that. It's just under what conditions will it happen? And the point is, a lot of other countries trade with the EU. They don't have, you know, they're not part of the single market. They're not part of the customs union. They're not part of anything. But all of this trade does happen every day, basically without problems. I mean, some people don't like the deal that they're getting particularly, but it was all negotiated and it all basically works. The UK will end up in that situation one way or another, whether they do no deal and just walk away, or whether they do formulate some special deal with the EU that might be better than what other countries have. We don't know, but it's not like it's all going to stop and just disappear. I mean, that they're going to lose the trade.
And we've got some more callers on the line. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, it's Dave again. I was just listening to Nathan saying that, yes, a lot of people trade with the EU and they're not in the single market, etc., etc. The trouble is that the people that are in the UK, the business people that are exporting, have been trading under those conditions for 43 years, and the whole business model of many of them is geared to that way of doing things. And the sudden removal of that access in the way that they've been used to working on March 29, 2019, is going to come as a bit of a shock for those that are not prepared. I see, especially with the coming out of the customs union, and from what I've seen and read in many sources, there's absolutely no preparation for this. Even Turkey is in the customs union. How many lorry parks are they going to be building on the UK side, on both sides even, of the Eurotunnel to cope with the changes of access, for example, that are going to be as a result of this? It doesn't affect me personally in any way, but I am certainly concerned for the people of the UK who seem to be blindly marching forward, not being informed of the consequences of many of these things that are unfolding now very, very rapidly. Anyway, cheers, Dave. Thanks.
I think you're right, and I think, you know...
Oh, sorry, Nathan. Hi, I'm still here, sorry.
Okay, a lot of people are going to be in that situation. I would assume a lot of businesses, and this is what we see with the bankers and with the huge companies who, you know, it's harder for them to do anything. They're huge and slower moving, so they can't adapt that quickly. We're seeing them start to make plans for not having what they've had for the last 40 years. And yes, if you aren't prepared for it and it does happen, it's going to come as a shock and it's going to be difficult. There's no question about that, but everybody at this point should know it is coming one way or another, and you've got to prepare for whatever your situation is. Yeah. And you can prepare, you know, if we get a deal, that's great. But if we don't, what am I going to do? And that's what you've got to get ready for.
And we've got another call. Thank you, Dave. We've got another caller on the line.
Okay,
thank you. Good morning. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Paul. Britain lived in a dream world. Do they honestly think the Minute built in England, and that's owned by Germany, do they think that Germany is going to leave that in England? That will be moved straight over to Germany. As like up in Sunderland, them big factories up there, they will just up and move. And they can afford to do it because they look on long, long term. Everybody's concerned about the banking industry. The banking industry, the people, the investors, do not give one iota to Britain. They're only interested in money. And when they can't get their money, they will just move it somewhere else. So it's the people of Britain that's going to suffer over this.
Thank you for your...
Not the politicians.
Thank you for your call in, Paul. Andreas, you wanted to come back on a...
I just wanted to make a point here. We, as I said, these negotiations are very, very complex. My fear is that they are in the hands of, I'm going to be generous here, mediocre politicians. And I think that perhaps at some point, especially the UK, on the UK side, they should bring into advisors from the business world, from the banking world, from different areas to advise these guys on what's the best route to take. Because I don't believe that they know what they're doing. And that's where we are, where no progress has been made after all these months.
Do you really think they haven't done that? I mean, I can't imagine any, you know, negotiating, whoever, what's his name, the head of the UK negotiating team.
David
you
Davis.
Go down through that team. I'm sure they have hired experts.
I'm not so sure.
Again, maybe I'm wrong, but I can't imagine that you wouldn't go to the people for all of those details. Like you said, it is very complicated, and the guy sitting at the table, there is no one in the world who can sit there and be an expert on everything. And I'm sure they all have hired experts on, you know, whether it's trade, whether it's on immigration, on anything else that has to be negotiated. I'm sure you don't just have the politician who is elected there making it up as he goes along. I mean, yes, anything's possible, but I can't believe that is the situation. I'm sure those experts are there. Unfortunately, you can have three experts and three different opinions that are all valid because it came from an expert, and it does make sense if you did this, and the other one will say you do this, and that makes sense too.
And we're going to go live to the phone. So thank you for holding. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, apologies. John from Los Belices calling again. Just to say, Nathan's got it spot on. Of course, they're all wary of it, but we're all, like everybody, any change, we're dragged kicking and screaming to change. And I know the City Boys, as I was one, were 100% behind remaining because of the great salaries we were getting. But also, the Spanish gentleman there always makes me laugh when they got a Nobel Laureate Prize for Peace. To me, the EU... we've had all these years of peace, not down to the EU, it's despite the EU. I remind the gentleman that the EU was the catalyst via Our Lady Baroness Ashton, whatever her name was, who created the situation, part of the catalyst for the situation in Ukraine, tempting them with a $15 billion dowry. Don't sign with Russia, sign with us, right on the Russian border. So I think it's despite that situation and the situation with Greece, who hate the Germans, but also appalled with the auto industry. People fail to understand the auto industry. The UK is a colossal buyer of cars. We buy nearly a million more cars from Europe than we export. And the exports we do to Europe, 50-odd percent of the exports we send to Europe are produced by Renault, Nissan, BMW and Mercedes. These guys know what they're doing. BMW are going to build an electric car there. We've got expansion going on. And they will concentrate, rather than have to pay a 10% tariff importing their cars, they will concentrate on the huge imbalance we have of our imports compared to our exports. So they've got a huge domestic market they can satisfy and will do. And we talk about the components in this, do we have to import them? Yes. But they've recently, Toyota has said they're going to increase the components they produce in the UK from 40 to 80%. And having to pay tariffs on the components we bring in, these major corporations are probably going to build up components industry in the UK. Because we all talk with this nonsense about we're missing a market of 500 million people. But the UK, and this is the most important part about people, you have billions of people. It's the purchasing power. And the UK has huge purchasing power compared to our 60-70 million people, compared to countries who have much, much bigger populations, but less purchasing power, and purchasing power is the right equation. Anyway, listen, I won't bore you anymore.
Thank you for the call in there. We're going to another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Felix, sir. John is not boring. I enjoy listening to him. He's very thoughtful. But these votes of America, Trump, and Britain, Brexit, and Catalonia, these are one thing that is never really mentioned. It's the question of nation. The left is very divided on this issue of nation. Yet James Connolly, Irish Marxist, Irish leading left winger, joined in the 1916 rebellion along with the nationalists. Nation does not have to be right-wing. People often talk about these movements in Eastern Europe as being right-wing, fascist. This is a common thing in the left, but they don't have to be. The issue is really about nation. And John mentioned there about the idea of the EU being a giant scheme for keeping others out, for example, Africa. But Britain once had a car industry, a big car industry. What happened to it? I think that Britain was liquidated itself because it forgot that it was a nation. There's no reason why Britain now couldn't organize with its expertise and its tradition, couldn't organize a big electric motor industry and be able to sell its motors everywhere. The whole thing about nation is that you've got to defend your borders, and this is what the EU set out to do. It set out to liquidate borders, and I am very sympathetic to Africans and poor people generally, but their problems must be solved there. As soon as you bring a billion people in to these countries, you're going to destroy trade unions, you're going to destroy everything, and a real fascist movement will arise. People don't understand what fascism is. A real fascist movement will arise. When people talk about these nationalist movements as being fascist, very often the left says this, they're dead wrong. They're dead wrong. Merkel was the biggest most dangerous person on the face of the earth, as was Obama, when he invited illegal immigrants, to enter into their countries.
Okay.
Get on to Brexit. The people have decided, pull out as quickly as possible. EU should be giving money to Britain because of all the money that Britain has paid in over many years. Just get out, make a name for yourself in the world.
Thank you very much for your points there, Felix.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
This is Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. We go live to the phones. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Because I'm listening on the internet, I don't know where I am in the conversation, but I just thought I'd bring up anyways, because I heard Manny John call in again, talking about if they were going to make cars, that they'll probably produce more spare parts in this country to get round the problem of cost. At the moment, there's an item in the news that says that $500 billion has gone missing in UK finances, and somebody earlier phoned up and said that it's only the people that are going to suffer. At this moment in time, John from Leafy Islington, I think, doesn't really appreciate what's going on. It's okay him saying that there's a deficit, but at the end of the day, every country has their market of which they're trying to sell something, and it's whether or not people are going to be able to afford to buy something is more the issue. If you want to buy an egg, and the egg is coming from France, and they put a 2p tariff on it because that's what it costs to get it over here, it's going to make much more sense than buying that same egg from New Zealand and paying 500% more for the same product. At the end of the day, John keeps going on about how things are going to be fine, but as it's been mentioned on the show many, many times at the moment, nobody really knows what's going to happen, and you can't have confidence in something when you see the ministers of your country messing up negotiations and not really having a plan. It was also mentioned earlier that it couldn't be understood why no one hadn't made a plan, or it's unbelievable that they can't not have made some sort of arrangement for a Brexit. But at the moment, you can see every day that with Mrs. May dashing over there yesterday to square things up, that they don't have a clue. And until somebody can explain to me that things are going to be better, I'm still yet to be convinced. I'll listen to your comments on the radio, but thank you for my time.
Thank you for that one. We've got the French egg conversation where, of course, a nerf is a nerf. Andrew.
Look, with the Brexit negotiations, let's go back to the subject. Any businessman will tell you, any good businessman will tell you, the most important thing when you set up a business is to have a plan. A plan, normally you start with a 3-year plan where you know exactly where you're going to be after year one, year two, and so on. My fear is with this Brexit, there is no plan. So they are improvising, trying to see what is going to be something beneficial for the UK. The European Union are looking at it thinking, well, we have to get something out of this as well. But what scares me is the improvisation of all these negotiations. They really don't know where they're going with it. And as usual, the ones who'll pay the price for it will be the normal citizens like your listeners, Giles, and you and myself.
Yes. No, that's right. Yeah. They don't have a plan. And I mean, it's obvious because of all the disagreement we see every day in the news from the UK of different factions, not just of the Conservative Party or the Labour Party or anything else. It goes beyond parties of what should be done and what should be negotiated and what the UK should be trying to get. Everybody talks about this best deal for the UK, which everybody has talked about from the time that this referendum idea, you know, was first talked about. We have to get the best deal possible, but nobody has defined what that is, because every person you ask has a different definition based on their own personal situation or their own knowledge or whatever. I mean, some people are worried about trade. Some people are worried about immigration. For some, the best deal would, you know, all they care about is immigration and the rest of it doesn't matter. For some, it's trade. For some, it's what happens to expats from the various countries in another situation. And there is no, that we, that the public is aware of a best plan. This is what we want, and this is what we're going out to get.
And we've got a caller on the line. Thank you for holding, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello. Is it me?
It is indeed you, sir.
It's Robert from Meath. Just really something that's crossed my mind and has come to light just within the last few weeks is, as you all know, the owners of Vauxhall, which is PSA, I think, they said that they're going to cut 400 jobs out at Ellesmere Port because of lack of demand. And they also said, if you'd read a bit more, that one of the reasons they've picked Ellesmere Port is because of its low productivity. In other words, it was a higher cost to produce cars in Ellesmere Port than it was in any other of their plants throughout Europe. That's what they said. Now, the thing is, if you look at it at Bisfesant and take that point of productivity, you've now got the politicians all suddenly woken up to the fact that Britain's productivity is low. It's down the bottom. And until it raises that productivity, it's not going to get anywhere. You can talk about BMW and Rolls-Royce and everything else, but at the end of the day, it is the productivity of that country that matters. And that's the thing that earns it money. At the moment, Britain doesn't earn any money. It's permanently in hock and getting even deeper into hock. I mean, that's a problem. Nobody's actually faced it. The parties are facing it. But the reason, of course, that they can't come to a conclusion is because they haven't got a proper government. They've got a government by default. Theresa May is at the behest of her backbenchers, the DUP and everybody else. The only party that is united over this, I hate to say it, is the Labour Party. They know where they're going. They're the ones that are rocking the boat at the moment, and they're going to continue rocking the boat until they get their way. But there you are. That's my particular view.
Thank you very much for the viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Into the last 11 minutes or so of Viewpoint. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradio.com is the email. We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's me. I do apologise. One thing I did forget. By the way, Peugeot is one of the exceptions in the motor industry. It's been a bit of a failure, unfortunately. But one thing I did forget, what we all sort of forgotten, is that over 90% of UK businesses, which are unheard of because they're not the big boys who scream and shout, they don't export anything at all to Europe. That's over 90% of our UK businesses. And just to reply to Steve, I think he's highlighted a very good business opportunity. And Steve, you're listening in. I'm looking forward to eating one of your free-range eggs in the future.
Thanks very much for that call in. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Andreas.
Yeah, I'm just going to make a very quick point. The core of the vote of Brexit was about immigration. That's what people wanted to, the majority of people wanted to see. Nobody gave a thought to having to negotiate complex deals around the world within the EU and so on. That is the outcome of a populist vote. You think that all the problems are going to be solved by finishing migration movements. Let me tell you something. That's never going to finish because the history of the world is all about migrations. And that will continue to happen whether we like it or not. And that's what's happening now is that once the immigration problem is something that is solvable by controlling the borders, we are left with all these negotiations taking place that they're so complex and being led by people that I don't have much trust in.
In the 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
We're going to move on from that onto the story that broke over the last week, which is we have a caller on the line. Let's bring this caller on just very quickly. Good morning, caller, you're live. Oh, no, I just cut that caller off, excuse me. I was going to say you're live in TRE, but there, as the saying goes, and there he was gone. Ah, you're back again. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. Sorry about that.
Did you cut me off, Giles?
I'm afraid I cut you off in your prime, Hans. Sorry about that.
No, I just wanted to say, great statement from Andres. The immigration, the migration will not stop. I mean, everyone knows that we have to do to control it stronger. But as long as people as Felix call up and say, Merkel is the biggest danger to the civilized world, and she did let in that many illegal immigrants, where a bit of a clever people know that most of them were refugees from the Syrian, Iraq, and Afghanistan wars, call them all illegal immigrants, be stranded in Europe, being like animals left over in trains in Hungary from nationalist fascist governments like Orbán's, and then saying they are all illegal immigrants instead of treating them as refugees. You see, the people are talking so many alternative facts, also on your show, on the internet and Facebook and everywhere, that this world will end up bad, I hate to say it. But the main problem is the misinformation and the alternative facts and the people. You know, you can hear 10 times a guy who is definitely wrong saying something, but you know that maybe from 100 people, 10 will believe it and they will spray it. And that's where we are now. Misinformation led to Brexit. Misinformation also led to, well, I'm Austrian, as you know, and the Austrian Liberal Freedom Party is not fascist. They are nationalists. They won 26%, and that's about as far as they can go. And in Germany, the AfD had 12%, and this 12%, it's the only party against the EU, right? All the other six parties are pro-EU. So there's 12% in Germany, obviously against the EU. No, I just wonder if this is not a number to be afraid, because so many people seem to be, you know, and say, oh, all Europe is turning now and we have got 50% of fascists already. It's not true, yes. The Austrian guy who won the election, a 30-year-old, called Kurt, he jumped on the train and took actually the win from the Freedom Party, and only due to the immigration policy. And, I mean, I'm conservative normally, but what this is a lot of populism to win the elections. He knew exactly when he jumps on the immigration train, he will take the votes of the far-right party, and that's what he did. And but there's not much behind then to solve the problems of the countries, of low pensions, of low, of those, like in Germany, they have got those many agencies sending workers out, and some people work up to 2-3 jobs and don't make enough money, because the rich one is always getting richer, and the poor one seems to get always poorer, and then people blame it on the immigration. But it's not really that big impact. In Austria, there's no impact at all. The refugees didn't take jobs of us, and they don't cost as much as people say. Some people say they get 60 euros a day. I say, oh, yeah, 60 euros a day? This would be 1,800 euros a month. Where do you get this information from? And most of it is misinformation, and that's where we are now. And as long as people have got forums to call up, I like the show. I listen every Tuesday if I can. But it's dramatic how much alternative facts are on the market and how little most of the people investigate and try to find out the real numbers, isn't it?
Hans, thank you for your call and quite a few points made there, but Hans from Denia, a frequent caller. Nathan, do you want to come back on anything?
I think he is correct, and you know, it's information overload. There is so much information out there that nobody can possibly sift through all of it and try to figure out what is accurate, what isn't, and so on. From what Andrea said about immigration, I mean, yes, it is, first of all, an emotional issue almost anywhere in the world. And yes, it had a huge influence, I think, on the Brexit vote. The problem, the reality is, all right, once Brexit happens, when you get through all of these other things, the UK will then have much more control over its borders. I mean, it wasn't really an immigration vote. It was a vote to control immigration. But how they are going to do that and what control there is going to be is, of course, a question that no one has even touched on at all. It's not a Brexit question. It's something for after Brexit. But a lot of people voted for Brexit thinking, well, we're just going to stop immigration. Well, I mean, but if you think about it, everybody knows it's not going to be that simple. Immigrants of different types are necessary. just to keep the economy going for all sorts of reasons in any country. So, yes, they will have control of their immigration much better than they do now once Brexit becomes a fact. What they do with that control is, of course, the question that is still far from being answered.
Indeed. Andres, you want to come back on any of those points there?
I don't think anything's going to change in the UK with the immigration. It will continue to be what it is now. You're not going to stop it. You're not going to stop it in the United States. You know, whether there's a wall or there's no wall, you know, people will find ways of getting into more affluent areas because they need to. It's as simple as that. They're flying away, running away from hunger and wars and all sorts. You know, migration is not something that will continue to happen.
Of course, you're talking about illegal immigration as much as legal, and Britain will have more control over Europeans coming into the country. The question is whether they will actually stop more of them from coming in or not is a question that nobody has dealt with yet.
Indeed. 952-784-4000, the phone number. studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. Just looking at, we're almost out of time, and I just wanted to briefly touch on the Harvey Weinstein case. This is a problem that is bigger, is much more widespread, and that he's being targeted because he's been outed.
I think what it is, I mean, Harvey Weinstein is an example of a problem that exists not just in Hollywood, not just in the entertainment industry. It is pervasive in all areas where power is involved, money is involved, and men and women are involved. People, you know, use power to get and use money to get things they want. Sometimes what they want is sex. If you have power, whether it's in a industry like the movies that everybody, you know, is aware of and pays attention to, and you know more about that industry than probably any other in the world. But the same thing is happening, I think, all over. And I'm afraid something like Weinstein, this will be the lead story for a long time. Then it'll go away with people having, without thinking about it, the idea that, well, that problem is solved. And he is not the problem. He is an example of a problem. And, you know, hopefully it will make aware and people to do more about the problem having nothing, you know, well beyond Hollywood and the entertainment industry.
I don't know much about Hollywood, but my understanding always was, you know, if you want a part in a film, if you're a girl, you have to sleep with a producer. That's what my understanding always was, you know. I'm just surprised that suddenly the media has picked up on this guy. I mean, I'm not, you know, condemning the guy.
It's the shock value of the whole thing that, yes, I agree is amazing. I mean, if you were going to cast a movie with This Is the Story, Harvey would be right out of Central Casting.
Well, we're right out of time. It's been a pleasure and a privilege. Andres Galado, thank you today.
Thank you, Giles.
And Nathan Thomas.
A pleasure.
This program will be repeated at 6 o'clock.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe SL.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.